I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
I haven't taken the baby on the bus yet, but I'd like to because I think it'd be funny.
Bus baby.
And yeah, and it's just like, it's like having a large package. You know what I mean? Like, it's like being the person who's like, excuse me, hold on, pardon me.
Yep.
I feel like that's kind of what having a baby is like all the time.
I have this package.
Well, it's because it's always like, oh, ha, I come with all of this.
Yep.
Like, I went into, what was I about to tell you?
Babies are packages.
Ah, yes. Today, today I went to go, pick up the, graduation trinkets. So, like, mm-hmm. You know, when you graduate from the improv school, mm-hmm. We give them a diploma and a trinket. So I went out to buy all the trinkets. And I go to Austin Gift Company, mm-hmm. which is over on South Lamar. And I really love that place because it's like, you know, just all little. It's kind of like a bunch of Etsy stores, but in one place.
I've never heard of that place.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's also great if you're looking for, like, trinkets that make no sense, which is exactly what I'm looking for when I am buying the graduation stuff. And it's very convenient to go and just buy a random... My favorite gift that I ever bought for somebody was a jar of Barbie doll heads.
Oh, God.
It was so great.
Oh, God. I would not like that trinket. I have this weird, like, aversion to, like, plastic toys and action figures.
Really?
Yeah, it's so weird. It's one of my, like, weird things. And it started when I was little. Like, I hated the way they smelled, and it just, like, nauseated me. Mm. And so whenever I would get a doll from some, like, well-meaning family member, I would, like, hide it in my closet so that I didn't have to look at it or, like, be near it or have to interact with it.
Yeah, I wonder, I mean, I'm sure at some point in the history of our lives, because I think, I don't know how close in age we are, but I mean, even if it's 10 years, when toys were made out of, like, noxious plastics, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, where people would have to wear full-on gas masks to make them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, these are things we're handing to children, is that? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That seems fine. Yeah. Oh, I know you cannot take a left there.
Yep. Oh. Welcome to Austin. The person had a California license plate.
Oh, I just made assumptions based on the ponytail. That probably isn't correct. Actually, I was just thinking about how I want to get a short haircut.
Mm-hmm.
A shorter haircut. Because I feel like the shorter my hair is, the more people take me seriously.
Really?
I don't know why. I think it's probably in my head. And also, clearly, I have a thing against people with ponytails. So that's...
Yeah. Some unconscious bias right there.
Yeah, I mean, I had a ponytail for a while, and I kept looking at myself in selfies like, no, what's this? Who's that girl?
I'm the opposite, because, like, I don't know, I'm very, like, hung up on, I just hit a landmark birthday, and I'm very aware of how I'm getting older. And not to say that anybody that's over my age is old or anything, it's just kind of my own thing.
Sure.
And I'm desperately trying to grow my hair out because I feel like it makes me feel more attractive and look younger.
Interesting.
And I loved my short haircut, and I thought it looked really cute, but I'm like, I don't want to be cute. I want to be hot. And yeah, so now I'm, like, desperately trying to grow it out because I felt like I felt more attractive with long hair.
Right on. I mean, I feel like in movies and television, when they're making a character younger, they give them longer mm-hmm. hair. So that's probably
and
part of it.
Have you noticed that they all have that same kind of gentle wave to their hair?
Yeah.
Apparently, that's on purpose. It's because when your hair is, like, stick straight, it's easier to notice on camera when it's not totally correct between takes.
Oh, yeah.
But with, like, a little bit of a wave to your hair, it's easier to like, not notice that it's been tousled a little bit or that it's moved a little bit. So that's why, like, every woman in television and film right now has that, like, kind of gentle wave almost soft curl to their hair.
Oh, man. How helpful. I love that. I love little things like that. Yeah. So, you know this.
I know this.
Do you know it because you do film and people in film told you this thing? Or?
No. I mean, I think it was a film friend that, like, shared the article. I went to Emerson College in Boston where there's a lot of my friends did film. I have a lot of friends that are like in LA right now doing film or doing things around it. So I see a lot of that stuff in my feed, even if it's not something I participate in so much. But I also have like a complex about my hair. So I think that's probably why it caught my eye.
Sure, sure.
Everybody has these nice, pretty curls and pretty waves, and my hair can be stick straight, frizzy, or enormous, and there's nothing inside of those.
Yeah, well, but one thing you have to always remember when you're looking at people in movies is that another person did that person's hair.
Exactly. Yeah.
I used to try to put makeup on, but after I got my makeup professionally done, I realized it was completely unnecessary of me to try ever, because I'm not going to do even half as good as this person. I've seen myself after being professionally done up. I'm awesome looking then. Right? And it's not to say that I think that I'm unattractive other times. I just think they're very good at their jobs, you know? And I was, and so I'm like, you know, I'll get it professionally done if I really need to look good.
Yeah.
Like I was thinking about getting new headshots done, and it was like, don't even think about not getting, go get your makeup done.
Get your makeup done first.
Get your hair done, and then get your, even if you, the photographer is somebody you know, like, fine.
I think I do an okay job on my makeup, but I cannot get contouring for the life of me. I have tried so hard to make contouring work, because when it works, it's awesome. But I just can't do it. It just looks like these very, like, stark lines. And then when I, like, try to blend it out or whatever, my face just becomes this one uniform color without any sort of contouring or highlights or whatnot.
Sometimes I think you have to just accept the lines. That when people look at you, they don't... You see it because you're looking at yourself. But, like, when other people... I mean, some people it's super obvious. But some people it's not.
Yeah.
Meaning, like... I feel like unless your skin color was starkly in one direction, then sure, it would be. It's almost like straight hair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're peach enough that it's like, it's a vague, you know, you're not like so ivory that like literally even the tiniest little thing ruins the whole. And you're not like dark skinned enough that like, I'm sure that's difficult to match and stuff like that. You know, with the contouring, which I think is a new thing, right? That's
fairly
like
new.
A new way to do it.
Yeah, it's like blush has kind of always been a thing.
Sure.
And I was watching this video. It was one of those like BuzzFeed videos where it was like, we did our makeup like the 20s. And it was telling you to almost do like all of the contour things, but with blush. So like people had blush on their foreheads and blush on their cheeks and like blush on their chin and on their nose and like... all of kind of the places that you would have all these other things we use, like the bronzer and the highlighter and all that. And they just all looked very flush.
I like how the baby kind of laughed. Like, I was like, that's ridiculous. Why would you put so much blush on your face?
Baby,
actually, I mean, I guess
lessons.
That's the way it is. Yeah, who knows? He could be an amazing makeup designer someday. We don't know. He'll be like... I remember when I was a child, talk of blush, and I realized people need blush.
Some people are just naturally peachy.
Yeah, right? He comes up with this, we're like, didn't we say that? I recorded! Oh, South By, it's coming.
I see it.
Oh, wow. I always forget the installations. It's kind of fun when downtown becomes like an amusement park.
Yeah.
I actually am, my plan is to come down here on the bus with the baby so he gets some fun, you know, bus baby situations.
Bus baby.
And then, that's actually going to be, I'm going to make videos called Bus Baby. but also just to walk around.
Yeah.
Just to see like the spectacle. Like
I
last year when they had the restaurant from Breaking Bad.
Yes!
Pollos Hermanos?
Yep,
like, what?
But they served curly fries? Like, this is... I know... Okay. Like, why do this if you're not going to serve chicken? However, I do know chicken is probably expensive to give out to free for hundreds of people, but still.
And I bet you a legal nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
You'd have to get, like, essentially McDonald's chicken fingers. Because the, like, frozen stuff to just a psh.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they're not an actual kitchen, so they have to sort of do stuff that's pretty simple.
Just brought in some fryers.
Though I did see a sign out front that said breakfast tacos, and I remember thinking, oh, well, there you go, that's that seems simple enough. But I don't know.
I had a press pass last year, and it was awesome. It was for interactive, and I got, like, secondary access to music and film, though I don't think I really used it. But
it's hard to really use it all.
Yeah, but it was so much fun, and I'm, like, sad I don't have one this year, but I didn't really keep in contact with the person that that signed me up for it, so I kind of understand. But I don't know, I feel like I'm going to be, like, walking around this weekend, like, oh, I wish I had my pass.
Oh, well, you always do. Like, I feel like when you live in Austin, you either never go or you know a guy.
Yeah.
And so you try to get it hooked up in that way. You know what I mean? Like, and I too had connections for a couple of years to get free passes to stuff. And who knows? I mean, sometimes I just get phone calls like the day before stuff, usually as a seat filler, where they're like, hey, can you come to this thing? And I'm like, that's yep. Cool. Yeah, I don't know how I got on that list, but I'll take it. But at the same time, like, I don't know, it's like when you can, you'll take it, because I never looked, because somebody, every year I got a pass and I didn't think about it.
Yeah.
This year I looked at the prices and I was like,
it's
oh my
so
God.
Expensive. Like $1,800 for a platinum, which gets you into everything, but $1,300 to do like one of them.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why not? I mean, if you're going to do one, you might as well get the platinum. But oh my God, who has $1,800 to just drop? Plus, you probably are taking time off from work.
Yeah. Like, this and is traveling to here.
Right.
Which is the most expensive time of year to travel here. And it's the most expensive, like, hotels of the year. Like, so, I mean, even though I say, every year it's all like, rah, rah, South by. God bless you all. Thank you. Thank you for swinging in. I mean, who knew what was going on? Like, I had no idea that not only were there so many rich people coming in town, but that there were so many rich people.
Exactly.
I mean, it just crazy. Blew my mind. It also made me feel better about the volunteering. I was like, oh, no, it's totally worth it now. Like, because when I first moved to town, I did the volunteering where you work a certain number of hours.
And
then you get, you know, you accrue, based on the number of hours you work, you accrue a badge, right?
Uh-huh.
And people will say, oh my God, that is so, like, crazy. And I go, no, it's not.
No.
You get so much for comparatively little. You're essentially making, like, I mean, if you think about it, you're making at least $30 or $40 an hour.
Yeah.
If not more.
Because how much those cost.
Yeah, and what are you doing? You're usually just sitting somewhere going, no, you can't go in this door. Like, I worked like five parties where I stood at the door and checked badges. How difficult is that? No. Not at all. For $1,500?
Exactly.
Yeah, I will
totally do
I
it.
Will be the I will be the guy who's like scraping up, you know, like watermelon off the front of the seats if that's what you need me to do. You know what I mean? Like, I'll take it. So wild. Such a wild thing.
Last year, my favorite, like, attraction was one that they actually opened up for everybody, so it was kind of a free attraction for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was the National Geographic House.
Ooh.
It was really cool. Like, they had an open bar with specialty cocktails. They had all of these little exhibits. You could get this fun little video of yourself looking like a National Geographic, like, exhibit, I guess. It was really cool. And I went in a bunch with my badge, but they opened it up to the public a couple times, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, those are fun. That's another thing I'm going to try to look for, is to see if there's any. Right now, my baby's a little too little to bring him to, like, things where you're, like, playing around, because you can't even really. I mean, he crawls. That's about the extent of it. But I'd love to, like, go to wild immersive stuff and see what that's about. Probably scary for a child, but you know, what are you going to do?
Start him early.
Totally fine. I mean, he gets a lot of improvisers in his face.
Yeah.
He deals with bits more than any other person, really.
Oh, gosh.
So many bits. So funny. So you went to Emerson.
I did.
That's super exciting. I feel like, tell me about it, because when I graduated from high school, I left Boston and I was like, get me the hell out of here. I'm not interested in being part of this noise ever again. And so many people were like, why didn't you go to schools in Boston? Because they had all the things you wanted. And I was
Boston's amazing.
So tell me about Emerson. What was it like?
So basically, it wasn't my first choice school. My first choice was Smith College. I wanted I wanted to go to Smith College, stay with my high school boyfriend, like live there forever and be, I don't even know what I wanted to be. I thought I could like sustain myself as a journalist, like working at a local paper, which like thinking about what those salaries are like I probably couldn't do that if I had Smith College debt. As it is, I have lots of debt from Emerson. But I went to Smith Academy, which was in the town that Sophia Smith grew up in, so I would have gotten half tuition, but I got waitlisted. So I was like, all right, where else did I get in? What else am I interested in? And I looked, and Emerson had a writing, literature, and publishing degree. I'm like, oh, I want to do that more than, like, being a journalist. I want to work in publishing. I want to work in books. Like, that sounds cool. Sign me up. And so I got in, and I went on a tour, and, like, I just stepped into the first building, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is my school. This is my college. This is going to be my alma mater someday. And it was awesome. Like, I come from this tiny, tiny little town where I was kind of the weird kid because it was very sports oriented and I was a theater nerd and a writer. But suddenly at Emerson, I was surrounded by other creatives and I went from being kind of like the loserly kid to being one of the cool kids. And it was so awesome and bizarre at the same time. And I know, just really great. But I was also kind of at a disadvantage because I went to such a small school where I only had like an English class to work on writing, whereas everybody else had been like on the school paper or already taken a journalism class or like written gotten things published in their school magazine. Also lots of rich kids. So once there wasn't housing anymore, I had to get an almost full-time job to pay for Boston rent. And all of my friends had their parents paying their rent. So they could do lots of the extracurriculars, which was really where everyone was building their resumes for these creative jobs. So, I mean, I did okay. And after I had to move back with my parents because I couldn't continue to live in Boston. But I don't know. It was awesome. And I loved writing. The one extracurricular I did do was working on the school's literary magazine. So that was really cool. And I had a couple of internships in Boston at publishing houses, which helped me get an internship back in Western Mass at Family Fun Magazine. And then I kind of realized like publishing wasn't going to be a very lucrative job and I had lots of debt. And wanted to not live at my parents' house forever. So I kind of channeled those talents into a marketing position, and that's kind of where my career started. So,
You're in marketing as a during the day?
My day job actually kind of has evolved from marketing.
Oh, okay.
I started working as what was called a community consultant. So I was working for a SaaS company that created online online social communities for nonprofits. And then I realized that I really like connecting with people and talking with people and like fostering those relationships. So I got a job as a customer success manager for a company called Procore. And that's where I've been working for the past few months, just being in charge of those relationships with our customers and making sure that they're going to renew again. If they're not going to renew, then why? Trying to like repair that relationship and get them what they need so that they do renew. So it's kind of a more focused in the whole relationship aspect of things that I like.
Yeah.
So that's my day job.
That's good. I'm glad. It sounds like you enjoy it.
I do.
That's great. That's really wonderful. So I know you mostly from my performance perspective, but it sounds like your education, and I know some success in your life has been in writing.
Yep.
Before I ask you about your books, then tell me, how did you get to Austin? How did you get into improv? Were both of those things, part of a transition, when you graduated, or what got you here?
So I had it in my head I was going to move to Los Angeles.
Sure.
And it wasn't for performing or anything. I just figured I would continue to work in marketing, but I would live in Los Angeles where the weather is gorgeous and I had friends who were doing film, so I knew people already. I met a man that would become my husband, and he is not a person that would do well in L.A. Huh. He's kind of big and grumpy, and...
I got one of those, too.
Exactly, yeah. He... I feel like I'm talking about a toddler or cat or something. He takes a little warming up, too. But he is very sweet, and he's a creative type also, but he would not do well in L.A. So I was like, look, I just want to get out of Massachusetts. I want to go somewhere with beautiful weather. That's all I need. I can really work anywhere. And he's like, well, let's keep our options open. And so my best friend moved here because her husband got a job at Facebook.
Right.
And I came to visit, and I adored it. And I came home, and I'm like, Austin's awesome. He's like, well, do we want to move to Austin? I'm like, would you want to move to Austin? Have you ever been to Austin? He's like, my aunt lives there. Like, I used to go all the time. And she'll let us live with her. She's, like, she works at Dell. She's got, like, a pretty awesome job. And she's not in her house half the time because she's managing a team that has an office in Taiwan, I think. So we did it. We moved down here together. Corey got a job first, and then I got one soon after and got our own place. And it was just kind of like we wanted to move somewhere, and Austin just fit.
How many years ago was that?
5.
Right on. I was gonna say, because you've been here a while.
Been here.
Four
coming on 5, yeah.
Yeah. Still, that compared to a lot of people, that's a long time. You meet people and they're like, I moved here last week. And
exactly.
You're like, okay.
I'm like, I get excited though. I'm like, oh, there's so many things I can show you. Because I haven't been here long enough to be like, ah, Austin's going to crap. All these things are happening and it used to be so much better. I'm like, Austin's awesome and it's getting more awesome.
I think so too. And I think that there is I don't think that it's like you're going to eventually become that in the same way that like people say, oh, by the end of, the longer you're married, the more you get, ornery about it. I really think it's just a personality. If you're open to like excitement and change and you can roll with the punches, I feel like living in a booming city or having a relationship, you can be fine.
Exactly.
Oops. I almost forgot to get off on the airport.
And as for improv, I've been like performing in some capacity since I was 6. Like I've always been on a stage. That's my happy place. So,
left?
Left. And just go till airport ends.
Okay.
I've always been happy on stage. And I couldn't find community theater in the same way that I had it in Western Mass.
Totally.
And all I could find when I Googled theaters in Austin were improv. And I'm like, I didn't really like improv when I was younger, but I guess that's all I have, so let me try it. And I ended up loving it, so...
In Western Mass, did you ever do a Williamstown Theater Festival, which is in Western Mass?
No, I did not.
No? Oh, that's a wonderful theater festival. But I suppose it depends on the kind of theater that you were, like, involved in, because if you're doing a lot of musicals, it really wasn't musicals.
It was mostly musicals that I did.
Yeah, right on. Because I did some musicals in various places in high school, and then in the summers... in college, because I went to college in Dallas, which is what got me to Texas.
Oh, okay.
And then that's how I got to Austin, was college girlfriends all moved here after, and I didn't. I bounced around, but then they were like, hey, you should come hang out with us. We're here now, and we're married. You should be here. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right. And I had a weird relationship that really kicked me in the butt to move here, because I kept going back to Dallas because that's where I was.
Yeah.
It was my home base in Texas. And when I went back home, every summer, I did theater at different places. So one time I did Williamstown Theater Festival, and then one time I did stuff at Weston Community Theater, I believe.
Okay.
That was one. Excuse me, everyone. Am I in the wrong lane? I probably am.
I think that truck thought there was a lane that there wasn't.
Yeah, no, that it's... I'm just trying to be easygoing in the flow of traffic right now.
Yeah.
So you've been performing consistently.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty great. Was there any performance that you took part in at Emerson, or was most of your focus on writing and so that's how it just stayed?
I tried to be involved in theater there, but all of the theater kids like took all those spots and there was a bunch of nepotism there and stuff.
Oh, and right on.
My last 2 years at Emerson, they opened a second, Emerson's all downtown and it's all kind of on Boylston and Tremont, but they got another building kind of in Chinatown a little bit, and that's where they put all the musical theater kids and all the theater kids.
Oh,
so
right,
eventually
right.
They kind of had their own space and that's where all of that kind of congregated. I tried. I just never got into anything.
Right.
And I didn't have, like, an audition song with, like, accompaniment and all that, so...
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, yeah. I just was like, all right, I'm just going to focus on the writing. I was in a couple of short, like, film pieces, and my friend wrote a musical and gave me a part in
it.
Ooh. So that was fun, but that was, like, second semester senior year. And that was the only one I was... only musical that I got into.
Yeah.
Because I'm the lady.
No, that's pretty wild that somebody wrote one. That's awesome. Was that a student or a teacher?
Yep, it was a student.
Awesome. So cool.
Yeah.
That's super fun. Yeah, I wondered how big was your... So, like, in your class at Emerson, how many students graduated with your degree when you graduated?
A couple hundred, I think. I feel like
there
was about maybe 1,000 per class or a handful of hundreds per class. It wasn't a huge school.
Oh, right on. Well, like, in my... There were 6 graduating drama majors in college. So, I personally know all 6 mm-hmm. of the people who graduated with the same degree as I did in the same year. And I keep track of them, because I think it's really awesome that most of us, if not all of us, are doing theater stuff in life. And I was like, yeah, way to stick with it. Heck yeah.
I keep seeing people I recognize, like, in TV and stuff. I'm like, that's good. I'm glad that you were able to make this happen.
Yes.
A lot of them, their parents were still paying their rent in Los Angeles for a while, but...
Sure. There's different levels of how people get to that point.
Yeah.
You know, I find that, I've been, I don't know what milestone birthday you hit, but I'm gonna say that I'm... probably older than you because I have a milestone birthday this year and it's I'm turning 40. Mm-hmm. So I've done theater for a long time, and when I was in right out of college, I went to New York City and worked as a stage manager for a bunch of stuff.
Cool.
And met a bunch of actors who are now in movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's great. So awesome to see people that you've worked with that you like know from. You're like, that guy was in Midsummer Night's Dream with me, like, or whatever. Like, you know, you see somebody and you're like, wasn't that guy one of the Jets? Like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like it happens more often. And I feel like it's a test of being a creative and, like, maintaining your own cool to feel happy for those people.
Right.
Because many people, many, many people... that we know will be very negative about other people's success. Like, somebody gets something and there's, everyone's like, let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Like, I believe, one of Austin's newest exciting, involvement in the larger world of comedy was there was I don't even know his name, but some kid who's like 21 or something, who was a stand-up is a writer on SNL.
Oh, yeah.
People were pissed.
Aww.
I was so excited.
Yeah.
And they were like, I can't believe he's so young. And I was like, who's surprised that a young person got on SNL? Like, of course. Why
it's
wouldn't
cool
he?
It's cool to, like, know those connections and
like
all that.
He played the game and he got it. Like, don't be mad. He talked to the right person at the right party. Don't be mad. He, like, there's no way that anyone knows how it works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it just happened to work out in that moment. And it's like, there are certain people that I'm always pushing for. But whenever any person that I'm even remotely associated with gets any level of success, I'm happy for them. Because they're working hard the same way mm-hmm. I'm working hard. Why shouldn't I want them to have what I want and what they want? You know? Like, yeah. I don't know. It's silly, I think. Their success does not take away from my journey or anything like that. So speaking of success, that we're all very supportive of, tell me about your book and promoting said book.
So I won agency representation via a Twitter contest.
Awesome.
Where you had to pitch your book idea to this agency, which happened to be in my hometown. So I knew about it because I could see the office from my porch. And they knew me too, but I got through because of people voting and stuff like that. So
that's great.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Like strangers voting or like your old friends from high school voting?
Probably a combination, but I also, towards the end, they picked the winner, out of everything. And they said that my book idea was just the most marketable and the one that they thought they could actually sell and all that. And no bias or anything. So we started pitching my book.
I suppose they might have had to find they had to be super legit about you because they did know you. And if anyone ever found out that they had been aware of you beforehand, they'd be like, "Why did she have to win the contest?" You know,
exactly.
She really legitimately was good. Awesome.
But
so then you had to write a book,
right? So at first you with nonfiction because it was. I have a food blog, and that's kind of what got me interested in food, and they were very specifically a literary agency about, for cookbooks. So I came up with this idea called Forking Up, and it was called Forking Up, Food for New Adults, and it was divided into, life, things. Here's food to cook when you go through a breakup, or when you're in your first apartment, or when you are between, payday and non-payday, and stuff like that. So that's what we were marketing, that's what we were pitching to all of these. Oh, up here you take a right. This is my right. Okay. We're marketing or pitching to all of these publishers, and the editors would love me and love my voice. We'd get on the phone, and then they'd take me to their marketing team. Marketing team would be like, she doesn't have a big enough platform. She's not going to sell the book on her own. We can't do this. So that was frustrating. And so it took 2 years before I finally had a book deal, and it was because a publisher came to my agent and said, we have an idea, do you have a writer? And so it wasn't the original book idea I was pitching, and we're kind of waiting to see how my book does in the first year before we decide to either pitch a follow-up to the book that I wrote, with their guidance, or to pitch the original book idea that I had. So,
because now that you have more of a fan base.
Exactly. I have a platform and I can prove that I can sell a book. So, the book that they proposed was called How to Eat an Artichoke, and it was a bunch of culinary how-tos. And so I just worked with the editor to make it my own and create my own list and come up with these pithy little intros and you're going to bear right and then
here?
Yep. Bear right and then turn right up there where it
okay.
I really made it my own and worked with the editor to they sent me a preliminary list and I sent one back and made additions and edits and all that. So they had the initial concept, but
take
I really
right.
Yeah, take great. But I really wrote the book.
That's so interesting. That is a fascinating view into having that kind of job that you got their attention with one idea, but then ended up doing something else.
Yep.
How fascinating. I bet you that happens so often, too, where they say, do you have a writer who can just write this idea that we have?
Mm-hmm. And because I went to school for publishing, like, I knew how editors work with writers and how much, like, the writer ends up having to let go of some of their initial ideas because the editor knows how to make the book and knows how to make the book successful. So my editor would be like, I'm really sorry, but I think we have to cut this one, or could you think of another idea for this? And I was just like, yeah, sure, great.
Probably best that you were not so married to the ideas then,
yeah,
so that you could make the editing better. Like, you could take their notes. Oh, sorry. You could take the notes
exactly
from them. I find that in the classes that I teach, especially as I teach sort of higher level sketch, people will get very precious with the way, once they feel confident in their own voice, they'll be like, but this is how I write. And I'm like, that's great, but.
So it's where those cars up there, like that white car that's kind of coming out, it's behind the trees now. Not where this red car is, but the next one, that's where I get into my complex. but yeah, being like,
here?
I don't know. Yeah, right there. My editor liked working with me because I wasn't, like, for one, I was very aware that I was a first-time author, and that, like, if the book didn't sell, I probably wouldn't get another one. So I was very open to switching it up and doing what I had to do, letting go of the ego.
That's so interesting. What's the name? What's your website for the food blog?
It's forkingup.com.
Oh, okay, great. So it goes with the other idea.
Yes.
Are we going in here?
Yep, and the gate won't close on you. Yeah. It could be open like an inch and it will reopen. And I'm this first building.
fun. Yeah, that's so great that you had the opportunity to write this book.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you've written the first one and it went well, they're giving you more opportunities and stuff like that?
We haven't tried yet because it hasn't been a whole year. Like, I wanted to get the second royalty statement and all that. But it got really good press. It was in the New York Times. It was Oprah's Cookbook of the Month for May.
That's going to mean something, yeah, for sure.
So it was awesome. The PR team was crazy good.
So the PR team is through the manager?
Through the publisher.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. It's a small independent publisher. It's called Quirk Books. But they put out Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Interesting. Yeah. I just talked about that. That's fascinating.
So that was fun. But, yeah, they have a smaller catalog, so they had the resources. The culinary agency that my agent is with, they do have a book publicity section of their company, because sometimes when your book comes out, maybe for a second time, like a reprint, or maybe you're doing a follow-up, publishers don't always give you PR or the team. So sometimes it's on you to do it, and a lot of times authors will actually hire outside PR teams to promote their book, because if their book doesn't sell, they don't get royalties and they don't make money off it. Yeah, it's interesting, but I'm really happy and pleased with all of the press I got for the book. So
hopefully
that helps with a follow-up.
So is that your hopeful path, is to continue to write more books? Or are you, and maybe cookbooks, maybe mm-hmm. other kinds of books? Like, what do you think is your next big goal? Because that seems like a pretty solid cross off the list of life to do.
I know, right? Like, right before I turned 30, I published my first book and got married. And I'm like, all right, what other, like, life milestones can we get in here?
Don't bite off more than you can chew. It's okay. Take your time.
Yeah. I got an Oprah magazine.
The 30s are when you can chill out a little bit more.
That's what
so don't
tells
worry.
Me. I don't feel like an adult yet though.
I think that it's an actual like physiological, like I think your hormones are less intense in your mm-hmm. 30s. Like, less intense in the way of, like, in your 20s, you're like, everything's insane! And then when you're in your 30s, it's kind of like, all right, everything's insane.
Yeah,
but, like, it's been insane
now.
Before, and I've handled it, so it's not, like, crazy. I mean, don't get me wrong, I know plenty of people who are insane of all ages. Mm-hmm. But... But it's almost like we were talking about earlier, where there's just some people who are, you know, grumpy and don't want to, like, see positivity.
Yeah.
And then there's just some people, I think the people who grow old gracefully are the people who are, like, having a good time throughout and not going, like, my heyday was 30 years ago. Like, all right, come on, get over it. So what is your next goal?
Well, I really do like my day job. I feel like writing will always be there. And, I mean, I could be doing more to really push, like, freelance writing and all that. But I just have fun with it. Like, I love my blog. I love writing. If I get to a point someday where I can totally sustain myself on just writing cookbooks, that would be amazing. But I'm also realistic. Sure. So, just, I like my job. I like connecting with people. I think just like writing by myself would, might be kind of a lonely existence. But I've started to get more into sketch comedy, and, I'm in like a sketch improv duo right now that I'm really excited about, and we're like churning stuff out every week. So
that's great.
Yeah. I'm excited. I want to put up a show soon.
But churning stuff out every week. So you like are working together on like kind of a regular schedule to get stuff written.
I texted him, I woke up in the middle of the night and I texted him a sketch idea. Like, and I thought that I dreamed it. And then I woke up in the morning and I had a text from him saying, that's a great idea. I'm going to write it out today and then we can edit it. And I'm like, wait, I actually texted you. And so we did. And he wrote the first draft and then I went in and edited it. And then we like sent it back and forth until, and then we put it up on stage, at Anything Live.
Oh, sweet baby. That might be our alarm clock.
Yeah.
Baby doll.
He's a cute alarm clock.
He's a good one. He just needs to go to bed. Is, I know it's after bedtime.
Oh, goodness, that's why.
It's so late. He needs to be in bed. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Thanks for chatting with me.
Allowing me to do it in a driving scenario.
No problem.
It'll be the first time. But yeah, it looks like that's a solid amount of time. That's great. Good. Thank you so much for chatting.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why podcast.